Hello and welcome to the audio version of our recent paper Anisotropic Carrier Diffusion in Single Methyl Ammonium Lead Iodide Grains Correlates to Their Twin Domains. The most important person on this paper is Ilka Hermes, PhD student in my group, and this has been a collaboration between the groups here at the Max Planck Institute, namely Hans-Jürgen Butt, Kaloyan Koinov, and Markus Metzger. And together with Liam Collins from Oak Ridge National Lab and David Ginger and Sarah Forpaul from Seattle University of Washington. So basically what we did in this paper was a couple of years ago we found these structures in methyl ammonium lead iodide grains, which I will from now on just call MAPI grains for abbreviation. So these twin domains, they are originating from something that's called ferroelasticity. So they are basically twin domains of the tetragonal crystal structure of the MAPI material. And ever since we discovered these stripe structures in the material, we were wondering what they actually, if they have any function in a solar cell. You probably know that MAPI is like one of the most prominent materials used in perovskite solar cells. So we wanted to know, do these twin domains have any effect on the charge transport in the devices? So we started on a quest to find out what is going on at these twin domains. And the result is this paper that I'm going to read to you now. So I'm going to dive right in. So organic, inorganic, hybrid perovskites display astonishing optoelectronic properties, making them suitable materials for active layer in photovoltaics, light-emitting diodes, and detectors. Among others, a direct band gap, high defect tolerance, and long charge carrier diffusion lengths qualify hybrid perovskites for planar heterojunction devices. As such, the diffusion length in methyl ammonium lead iodide can exceed the usual film thickness of 300 to 500 nanometer in perovskite PV devices by up to an order of magnitude. The diffusion length, LD, is the average distance photoexcited carriers diffuse before recombining. LD depends on the diffusion constant D via LD equals square root of diffusion constants time tau, with the charge carrier lifetime tau. While the carrier lifetimes, given by the recombination rates, depend on the trap and carrier density, the diffusion constant is a material property. However, values reported for the diffusion constant in MAPI vary strongly, with significant differences between single crystals and polycrystalline thin films, and even grain-to-grain variations within the same films. Furthermore, several investigations of charge carrier dynamics in polycrystalline thin films found an anisotropy in the diffusion correlated to limited carrier transport across grain boundaries. The limited inter-grain carrier transport could stem from poor inter-grain connectivity or a mismatch in crystal orientation. In their study on grain boundary restrictions of the carrier diffusion, Sizielski et al. Resolved an apparent asymmetric spatial distribution of diffusion constants within one single grain. This observation raises two questions. First, do individual MAPI grains display an anisotropic charge carrier diffusion? If so, which mechanism introduces the diffusion anisotropy? Indeed, Stavrakas et al. Recently visualized anisotropic carrier diffusion in MAPI single crystals. They proposed buried crystal boundaries in the bulk material lead to diffusion anisotropy. Evidence for buried boundaries was delivered by Jarivala et al., who imaged subgrain boundaries in single MAPI grains via electron backscatter diffraction. These subgrain boundaries could originate from crystal strain introduced via the cubic tetragonal phase transition. To investigate the diffusion anisotropy in MAPI and the underlying mechanism, we employed spatial and time-resolved photoluminescence microscopy, or PL microscopy, as well as piezo-response force microscopy, or PFM. PL microscopy detects photons released during bimolecular recombination of photoexcited charge carriers. In a sample layout without charge extraction, we could use PL microscopy to map the spatial distribution of diffusive charge upon local excitation. By applying a pulsed excitation, we furthermore detected time-resolved PL decays, which provide information on the carrier dynamics. To probe the carrier diffusion times, we scanned the detection of the time-resolved PL over isolated MAPI grains at varying distances from the excitation position. The time-resolved PL decays featured a delayed distance-dependent diffusion signal, which revealed a distinct diffusion anisotropy. We found that this diffusion anisotropy directly correlated to the arrangement of ferroelastic twin domains visualized by PFM on the same grains. Results: spatial and time-resolved photoluminescence microscopy. To resolve the lateral distribution of carrier diffusion times in single MAPI grains, we used spatial and time-resolved PL microscopy. We measured time-resolved PL decays following picosecond excitation pulses in varying distances from the excitation by moving the detection volume independently from the fixed excitation position over the grain. Previous studies employed similar experimental setups to determine local diffusion constant or evaluate the diffusion across grain boundaries in hybrid perovskite thin films. Here we focused on investigating diffusion properties of large isolated MAPI grains. First, to achieve an adequate range of distances between excitation and detection position without resolution limitations, and second, to exclude quenching effects from intergrain carrier diffusion. I still remember how Ilka came into my office and showed me this the picture of this grain. She came, Stefan, this is the ideal grain. It's perfect. It's 20, 30 micron large, and it has stripes all across the entire grain. So she was really excited when she discovered this grain. And this is basically, what we see in figure one is basically a clover-shaped grain, so with four arms, and we have marked one excitation spot in the middle. That's where the pulsed laser excitation was applied to, and then we show that in all four arms of the crystal grains, we put the detector and measured the evolution of the PL signal that we detected through the detector. So the investigated MAPI grain featured four arms. At its widest, the grain had a diameter of more than 20 micron with an overall area of 230 square micron. According to Johnston et al., the diffusion length expected for our initial charge carrier density of 10 to the 16 per cubic centimeter, we did a thorough calculation of that in the supporting info, is in the order of 10 to 20 micron and thus comparable to the dimensions of the grain. We positioned the pulsed laser excitation in the center of the grain and proceeded to move the detection volume of the time-resolved PL away from the excitation in different directions along the arms. For exemplary PL decays detected at comparable distances D1, D2, D3, and D4 between 6.5 and 6.9 micron from the excitation are shown in figure 1B to E. So what you see here in those graphs is the time-resolved PL signal that we recorded in the detector, which consists of a quick decay. I can also read you the paper, because we're describing it there. The detected PL decays were a superposition of two signals. In agreement with previous studies, we assigned the first initial peak and associated exponential decay to wave-guided PL emission from the position of the excitation spot. So those are the photons that are generated directly in the middle of the grain where we excite the charge carrier. So lots of photoluminescence is generated there and then is scattered into the detector, which gives a fast decaying signal. The second signal, a delayed peak function, represents PL emitted at the position of the detection volume via biomolecular recombination and diffusive non-excitonic charge carriers. For quantitative analysis, we fitted a time-resolved PL decays with an overlay of an exponential decay and a peak function, which is given by the equation reads as the amplitude of the signal as a function of time is an amplitude, a wave guiding amplitude exponential exponential t minus t zero divided by tau wave guiding, so the characteristic initial exponential decay, plus an diffusion amplitude divided by t minus t zero times the an exponential function of tau diffusion divided by t minus t zero. So we have basically this diffusive part and the wave-guided part. We use that as a fit function for the signals. For the diffusion peak function, we used a two-dimensional diffusion equation under the assumption that the excitons, the excitation occurs along a vertical line through the grain from which the carriers diffuse radially. Comparing the diffusion time tau diffusion obtained from the data fits for our four detection positions, we observed a considerable shift to longer diffusion times for arms 2 and 4. Namely, so we remember they were 6 and a bit microns away from the excitation, and so the diffusion time in arm 2 is 93.7 nanoseconds, and in arm 4, 78.9 nanoseconds, with an error of about 5 nanoseconds. Compared to arm 1, where it's 54, and arm 3, and it's where it's 57.5 nanoseconds, with a similar error. So it's the diffusion time is much longer in arms 2 and 4 compared to arms 1 and 3. Previous reports attributed such anisotropic charge carrier diffusion in hybrid perovskites to crystallographic anomalies such as grain boundaries. Multiple groups observed a sharp drop in the static PL distribution at the position of visible as well as buried grain boundaries, which can inhibit the charge carrier transport. So we looked into the static PL distribution next to investigate whether the anisotropy of the diffusion times was caused by buried grain boundaries. We mapped the static PL distribution upon local excitation at the same position as figure 1. The PL distribution was largely homogeneous without sharp intensity drop, which would have indicated the presence of buried grain boundaries. So here I should explain what you see in figure 2. Basically, you see the photoluminescence signal recorded through a camera with the excitation in the middle of the grain. So we basically see a bright spot directly around the excitation, which is, as I mentioned earlier, the photoluminescence that's generated directly at the excitation spot where the charge carrier density is high. And then we see much signal from the outer rim of the grain, where the photoluminescence is outcoupled, or where we get additional photoluminescence just because the charge carriers are trapped here. So instead, the PL distribution, instead of buried grain boundaries, we found that the PL distribution displayed a diffuse maximum in the PL emission at the position of the excitation spot and local maxima at the position of the grain boundaries, which originated from the enhanced outcoupling of wave-guided PL. Analyzing the line profiles of PL distribution along the green and the black line, we observed an anisotropic distribution with elongated intensity tail in arm 2, while the PL intensity in arms 1, 3, and 4 dropped by 50% in distances of 3.5, 3, and 3.7 from the excitation, respectively. In arm 2, the 50% mark was reached at a distance of 5.7 micron. In the light of the long diffusion times observed in arm 2 and the time-resolved PL data, we the result from the static PL is surprising. It seems that longer diffusion times correspond to neither a decrease of the carrier density along the same grain direction nor to an increase of non-radiative recombination. We suggest two possible explanations for the time-resolved and static PL microscopy results. Either an acceleration of the diffusion along arms 1 and 3 or a deceleration of the diffusion along arms 2 and 4. For the first scenario, several computational studies proposed a mechanism that would lower the bimolecular recombination and lead to an accelerated diffusion. These calculations showed that charged ferroelectric domain walls as well as polarized ferroelastic domain walls could act as charge selective carrier pathways, which allow for charge carrier transport with minimized scattering. The perovskite PV community largely accepted the existence of ferroelasticity in MAPI based on the observation of ferroelastic twin domains with a variety of imaging techniques, including PFM, transmission electron microscopy, and polarized light optical microscopy. Unambiguous evidence for the material's ferroelectricity, however, remains elusive. And that's putting it in very, very... nice words. So around the ferroelectricity in MAPI, this is a very controversial topic, to say the least. In one of the following sections, we investigate ferroelectricity in MAPI by means of advanced piezo response force microscopy measurements. The second possible scenario, the grain could have a higher concentration of shallow traps along arm 2 and to lower extent along arm 4. Which delay the carrier diffusion without acting as non-radiative recombination centers. The anisotropy in the trap distribution may again relate to ferroelasticity in the MAPI with structural and electronic anomalies at the position of the domain walls, delaying the transversal motion of charge carriers. So next we did piezo response force microscopy. This is actually, scanning probe microscopy is our main field of expertise here. So ferroelectric and elastic domain patterns can be resolved by PFM, a contact mode scanning probe microscopy method which applies an AC voltage between a conductive tip and the sample. Since ferroelectric materials are piezoelectric, the AC voltage drives an oscillating piezo response. In PFM, the amplitude and phase response of the sample cantilever system is detected by a lock-in amplifier and recorded while scanning the tip across the surface. Thereby, PFM maps ferroelectronic domain patterns. PFM can image both out-of-plane and in-plane piezo response by detecting the vertical or torsional cantilever displacements respectively. We collected lateral PFM data on the same isolated MAPI grain. The height signal and the deflection signal showed a grain thickness of 1.1 micron with an overall smooth surface and some terrace-like step edges. So again, in the figure you see this clover-shaped grain, now imaged through force microscopy, so with better resolution, and we have also have the 3D information. Now in the cross-section you can see that the height is quite homogeneously this 1.1 micron. So in agreement with a previous study, 2D XRD revealed that the majority of the grains on our sample had a 1-1-0 orientation parallel to the surface. Simultaneously to the height signal, we measured the lateral PFM signal. In this image, we clearly distinguished a periodic pattern that displayed no correlation to the height signal. Some of the domains spanned over almost the entire width of the grain from arm 1 to arm 3. The direction of the stripes changed by 90 degrees for arms 4 and the last 3 microns of arm 3, as indicated by dashed lines in the figure. The PFM phase profile in figure 3D extracted along the red line perpendicular to the domain shows that the domain width varied between 0.13 micron and 0.5 micron. So basically it stripes mainly all across the grain. So at least most of the arms we have parallel stripes, and only in the last arm there is small regions where we have perpendicular domain walls. When correlating the time-resolved PL decays to the periodic domain pattern, we observed that shorter diffusion times coincided with a carrier diffusion parallel to the domains, while longer diffusion times coincided with a carrier diffusion perpendicular to the domains. Hallelujah! That was exactly what we were looking for. So finally, we found something that the domain pattern does to the charge carrier diffusion. So it's faster parallel to the domains. So along arm 1, the carriers exclusively traveled parallel to the domains towards the detection position, resulting in the shortest diffusion time. Along arm 2, the carriers exclusively diffused perpendicular to the domains, which led to the longest detection diffusion time. Along arms 3 and 4, the domain orientation changed by 90 degrees between excitation and detection positions. Thus, the diffusion times detected here were combinations of parallel and perpendicular diffusion times. In arm 3, the domain orientation changed from parallel to perpendicular in close proximity to the detection position, giving rise to the shorter diffusion time compared to arm 4. To evaluate the consistency of the correlation of the diffusion anisotropy and domain arrangement, we compared several PL decays at additional distances parallel and perpendicular to the domains, which are shown in the supporting info, and we also inverted excitation and detection positions and repeated the PL and PFM measurements on another large isolated MAPI grain. In agreement with the initial results, we consistently detected longer diffusion times for diffusion paths perpendicular to for those parallel to the domains. These results suggest that the origin for anisotropic charge carrier diffusion in MAPI perovskite is directly related to the domain pattern resolved via PFM. So now we discuss the diffusion anisotropy. To quantify the diffusion along both directions of the domain pattern, we plotted the distance d versus diffusion time tau diff and fitted the diffusion constant d via the equation y equals square root of 4 times diffusion time times diffusion constant. This is basically derived from the definition of the diffusion constant, which is the diffusion constant d equals to the diffusion distance squared divided by 4 times the diffusion time tau. For the diffusion parallel to the domain, so basically it's a if you plot the distance, the diffusion distance as a function of diffusion time, you get this square root dependence, which is characteristic for a random walk type of diffusion. For the diffusion parallel to the domains, we obtained a diffusion constant of d parallel of 1.9 plus minus 0.1 square centimeter per second. And for the perpendicular diffusion, a constant of d perpendicular of equals 1.2 plus minus 0.1 square centimeter per second. So it's 1.9 versus 1.2. These values agree with diffusion constants from the literature measured within single grains of polycrystalline MAPI thin films. Reported values range between 0.8 and 3.3 square centimeter per second. Calculating the carrier mobility from the diffusion constants via the Einstein relation, d equals carrier mobility times Boltzmann constant times temperature divided by the unit charge, yields mu parallel, so parallel mobility 72 plus minus 6 square centimeter per volt second in parallel, and mu perpendicular equals 48 plus minus 4 square centimeter per 4 second. Square centimeter per volt second in the perpendicular direction. These mobility values are in the range of mobilities reported for polycrystalline and single crystal MAPI. Overall, we found that both the diffusion constants as well as the mobility of the charge carriers in the parallel directions were 50 to 60% higher than perpendicular to the domains, allowing us to quantify the diffusion anisotropy. And yeah, so in the graph you see that there is actually, it looks quite like a square root dependence. There is deviations from the fit. The diffusion seems to be faster further away or at for larger times. So the points at times larger than 50 nanoseconds are consistently above the curve. And this is something we will need to investigate further. While the fit of the diffusion constant coincided well with the data points at low diffusion times, we observed deviations from the fit for distances of more than 8 micron in both directions. This deviation from the fitted random walk diffusion model suggests that an additional mechanism affects the carrier diffusion, especially at larger distances from the excitation. We exclude a macroscopic drift effect originating from grain boundaries, since diffusion times from the grain center and diffusion times with inverted excitation and detection locations coincide. See, and we shown that in the supporting info as well. A possible candidate for this additional mechanism is photon recycling. A photon emitted via biomolecular recombination can be reabsorbed, create another free carrier pair at some distance from the source. In MAPI, the low escape cone and the high photoluminescence quantum yield of radiative recombination facilitates photon recycling, since light is kept in the crystal for longer distances, which increases the reabsorption probability. Photon recycling is a diffusive process, but with higher velocities than pure carrier diffusion. Thus, an overlay of pure diffusion and photon recycling would lead to an apparent acceleration of diffusion with increasing distance from the excitation. On the other hand, due to the squared dependence of the radiative recombination on the carrier density, we expect the decrease of the local carrier concentration further from the excitation to result in a lower probability for radiative recombination. Did anyone understand this sentence? So basically what I'm trying to say is that if you do an excitation in one single point, the carriers diffuse and dilute so quickly that the carrier density becomes so low that the photon recycling actually doesn't play much of a role anymore, because the probability for bimolecular recombination also reduces. So it's basically, if you have less charge carriers, there is less recombination. We basically supported this by a simulation that we show in the supporting info, where we basically took a very simple photon recycling model and looked if it has any impact. So in a two-dimensional diffusion situation, and we investigated whether that has any influence on the diffusion of charge carrier diffusion, but we found actually that with and without photon recycling, those curves looked almost the same. So photon recycling is most probably not the reason for not an explanation. So we looked for a mechanistic origin of the diffusion anisotropy. The distinct correlation of the diffusion anisotropy and the domain arrangement suggests that the underlying nature of the domains directly affects the carrier transport. By now, several researchers resolved periodic twin domains in MAPI thin films and single crystals, independent of the substrate or the preparation procedure. A requirement for the observation of the domains is a high crystallinity, and for surface-sensitive methods like PFM, a uniform crystal orientation. Previous PFM studies on MAPI delivered contradictory interpretations of the periodic twins. While some groups claim the PFM signal originates from ferroelectricity, others assigned the PFM signal to competing mechanisms. As such, Liu et al. Suggested that the periodic PFM contrast originates from mechanical differences between the domains due to ion redistribution and ferroelasticity instead of ferroelectricity. Yes, that's, and Liu et al. Is the study from Oak Ridge that was published by Stephen Jesse and in Nature Materials in 2018. While the ferroelectric nature of the periodic domains remains under discussion, their ferroelastic nature is widely accepted. So, and there is a ton of references. Ferroelastic domains naturally arise from changes in the crystal system to release internal strain. In MAPI, strain is introduced via the cubic tetragonal phase transition at 54 degrees Celsius, which occurs during preparation upon cooling to room temperature following the annealing step. Consequently, periodic ferroelastic twin domains of alternating crystal orientation form. Ferroelastic domain walls locally disrupt the crystalline order and therefore form energetic barriers. These barriers can act as shallow trap states or scattering centers which delay the carrier diffusion perpendicular to the domains. Additionally, Warwick et al. Proposed that structural anomalies on ferroelectric domain walls, about 1 nanometer in width, in the absence of a bulk ferroelectricity, introduce a localized in-plane electrical polarization of up to 6 microcoulomb per square centimeter, potentially driving carrier separation. A charge-selective accumulation of electrons or holes in domain walls can introduce an electrostatic repulsion between carriers of the same species within domain walls, thus accelerating the apparent diffusion. This additional local drift effect could explain the observed deviations from the random walk diffusion in the figure that we just discussed. Likewise, Shi et al. Found a suppression of non-radiative recombination in their calculations due to an effective charge carrier separation facilitated by ferroelastic domains, which reduce the electron-photon coupling. On the other hand, theoretical studies on charge separation and transport based on ferroelectricity proposed charge domain walls with 90 degree head-to-head or tail-to-tail polarization orientation. However, head-to-head and tail-to-tail orientation states give rise to energetically unstable domain walls due to large depolarization fields and rarely occur naturally. Instead, a weak charging of head-to-tail domain walls due to slight deviations from the 90-degree angle introduced by internal strain and lattice mismatch is more likely. To determine the presence or absence of a ferroelectric polarization in MAPI and therefore the decisive driving mechanism behind the diffusion anisotropy, we performed additional PFM experiments on comparable MAPI samples. In particular, we aimed at investigating whether the PFM contrast originates from a true electromechanical or ferroelectric response, or simply from a contrast in the contact mechanics, which would correspond to ferroelastics. Changes in temp sample contact mechanics, for example, introduced by variations of the contact stiffness, can strongly alter the detected motion of the electrostatically actuated cantilever, even in the absence of piezo or ferroelectricity. So maybe I should explain for the non-experts a little bit more here. So the tip sample contact is basically so you have attractive forces and you have repulsive forces, you have the elastic deformation of the sample. That basically is that contact is something like a harmonic oscillator, or you can, it's not really a harmonic oscillator, but it's definitely a spring, a damped oscillator system. And thus you also have something, a coupled cantilever tip sample resonance, which is called the contact resonance. And differences in the mechanics between tip and sample can shift this contact resonance to higher or lower to lower frequencies. So if you're measuring close to the contact resonance, then the shifts in this in the contact resonance can be mistaken for a change in the amplitude or in the phase of the PFM signal. So you're not actually measuring a contrast in the piezo response, but you're measuring a contrast in the contact mechanics. So to investigate this further, we looked at the vertical PFM signal with a laser Doppler vibrometer setup, and that's where we had the collaboration with Liam Collins in Oak Ridge. And he demonstrated this in a couple of papers recently. Here we observed a strong dependence of the PFM contrast on the laser position of the laser Doppler vibrometer. So basically, to read out the cantilever, you can position this laser Doppler vibrometer laser on different positions on the cantilever. And only when you position it directly on top of the tip, you're measuring the true vertical response of the cantilever. So when we positioned the laser spot far from the tip on the cantilever, a distinct PFM contrast showed a needle-like shape domain with more than 100 degree phase difference to the rest of the imaged area. However, when the position of the laser coincided with the position of the AFM tip, the domain contrast in the PFM phase vanished. The dependence of the vertical PFM signal on the laser position suggests that instead of a true electromechanical response, the vertical PFM contrast was caused by changes in the tip sample contact mechanics or by cantilever buckling. A lateral electromechanical response can introduce a false contrast in the vertical PFM signal due to a buckling motion of the cantilever. Overall, we excluded a true out-of-plane electromechanical response as source of the vertical PFM signal. So, bottom line, any PFM response that we see is purely in-plane, at least on the crystals on these 110 surfaces that we usually look at. Since LDV exclusively measures vertical electromechanical response, we investigated the nature of the lateral PFM signal via dual amplitude resonance tracking, or DART PFM. DART PFM tracks changes in the contact resonance via a feedback system that controls the excitation frequency. So basically, you're monitoring two amplitudes, one above, one below the contact resonance, and if the contact resonance shifts, the system adjusts the frequencies that the ratio of the two amplitudes stays constant. So basically, we're tracking the contact resonance. So if we have any shifts in the contact resonance, the system compensates for that. The DART frequency provides information about the nature of the PFM contrast, since variations in the tip sample contact stiffness, either due to mechanical or topographic crosstalk, cause changes in the contact resonance. By comparing the lateral DART PFM phase and the DART frequency output, we found a coinciding periodic domain pattern in the frequency and in the phase. For the domains on the left side of the image, where the stripes aligned almost perpendicular to the cantilever, both channels displayed a contrast only at the position of the domain walls. In the PFM phase, the domain walls featured an alternating contrast, a domain wall with a lower phase than the bulk followed as a domain wall. I need to read that sentence again. In the PFM phase, the domain walls featured an alternating contrast. A domain wall with a lower phase, then the bulk followed a domain wall with a larger phase and vice versa. So basically, the phase jumps up and down at the position of the domain walls. The DART frequency, on the other hand, imaged domain walls with a larger PFM phase as local frequency maxima, while the low phase domain walls were not resolved. So we have this alternating contrast in the phase and just a unipolar response in the DART frequency. And this is interesting, as I will explain now. The alternating domain wall contrast in the PFM phase indicates an alternating parallel and anti-parallel polarization along the domain walls, as suggested by Warwick et al. The reduced domain wall contrast on the vertically aligned domains on the right-hand side of the image supports this hypothesis. Here, the cantilever is oriented parallel to the domains and therefore not sensitive to the lateral electromechanical signal along the domain walls. For the bulk domains, on the other hand, we observed a largely uniform PFM phase signal suggesting the absence of a bulk ferroelectricity in MAPI. Oh hell, we needed to discuss a lot about this sentence, because basically we're killing ferroelectricity here. But maybe I should come back to the image and tell you again what we see. So basically in this part of the image we had two regions, one with domains that are in the image horizontally, and one part of the image where we had domains vertical to the image orientation. And in that image, the cantilever is oriented along the vertical axis of the image. So basically, the horizontally aligned domains, they can pick up this polarization in the direction of the domain boundaries, while it cannot pick up the polarization where the cantilever is perpendicular to the domain walls. Now I need to get back where I was. Yeah, we were discussing that our results suggest the absence of a bulk ferroelectricity in MAPI. Meanwhile, the domain wall contrast in the dart frequency originates from local changes in the tip sample contact mechanics, which shift the contact resonance frequency. Local strain gradients and structural anomalies at ferroelastic domain walls naturally affect the sample's nanomechanical properties and therefore the contact mechanics. As to why only every other domain wall changes the tip sample contact mechanics, we suggest an impact of the orientation of the local strain gradient, which alternates between adjacent domain walls. Based on this in-depth investigation on the origin of the PFM response in MAPI, we conclude that the structural and electrical deviations at ferroelastic domain walls from the bulk are the main contribution of the anisotropic carrier diffusion in MAPI. In context of the previously proposed mechanisms, an acceleration of the diffusion parallel to the domains or deceleration in the diffusion perpendicular to the domains, the latter seems to be the governing mechanism. The local disruption of the crystalline order and the strain gradients at the domain walls introduce shallow energy barriers which delay the transversal motion of charge carriers. However, the apparent presence of a local polarization at the ferroelastic domain walls may lead to an additional acceleration effect on the charge carriers. Lastly, we did not observe indications for charged ferroelectric domain walls as previously proposed. In applied perovskite devices, the effect of an anisotropic carrier diffusion on the vertical charge transport depends on the texture of the polycrystalline MAPI thin films. Rothmann et al. Proposed a 45-degree angle of the domain walls with respect to the 110 crystal plane. For highly oriented films, we expect the influence on the diffusion and isotropy to be minor along the 45-degree domain walls. However, in thin films with random crystal orientations of the constituent grains, the impact of the diffusion anisotropy could introduce heterogeneities in the intergrain carrier diffusion as previously reported. So now we know what the domains do to the charge carriers. Now in a last small chapter, we wanted to know how can we manipulate the domain arrangement. The relation between ferroelastic domain pattern and carrier diffusion offers new paths of device improvement for perovskite solar cells or perovskite-based optoelectronics by customizing the directionality of the carrier diffusion. Similar to other ferroic properties, the crystal orientation in ferroelastic domains can be switched upon application of an external stress. Strelkov et al. Demonstrated the stress-induced ferroelastic domain switching already in 2017. Here we focus on the effect of heat treatments on the domain alignment. As such, we found that heating a freshly annealed MAPI sample with a predominantly irregular domain pattern over the ferroelastic cubic tetragonal phase transition temperature of 54 degrees led to a complete disappearance of the domain pattern, further confirming the ferroelastic nature of the domains. So in the image, you basically see three topography and PFM phase images that were recorded at the same position. On the left, we have it at room temperature before heating, where we can see a couple of domain stripes with perpendicular orientation. In the middle, we see the experiment at 70 degrees Celsius, where the domain pattern completely disappeared, but the topography is unchanged. In the third image, we see again the same topography, so we're still at the same position and we're at room temperature after the heating, and we see a much higher density of domain wall of ferroelastic domains. So upon cooling the sample back to room temperature with a well-defined cooling rate of 1 degree centigrade per minute, the domain pattern reappeared with a changed arrangement. An increase of the domain density and a more regular spacing between the domains. We suggest that the abrupt cooling after the annealing step introduced the disorder and the lower domain density in the initial state of the sample, while the well-defined cooling rates resulted in an ordered high-density domain arrangement. Therefore, targeted heat treatments as well as stress-induced domain switching could be explored as future pathways to either reduce the anisotropy in the charge carrier diffusion by lowering the domain density or to introduce a preferential directionality in the carrier diffusion by parallel domain alignment. So basically, we can push charge carriers with the help of these domains in the right direction. So last part is the conclusions. Via spatial and time-resolved PL microscopy, we resolved an anisotropic distribution of carrier diffusion times on isolated MAPI grains. This anisotropic charge carrier diffusion directly correlates to the arrangement of ferroelastic twin domains, which form to reduce crystalline strain during the cubic tetragonal phase transition. Quantitative analysis of the diffusion dependence on the domain arrangement gave a 50 to 60% higher diffusion constant parallel than perpendicular to the domains. Namely, it rises from 1.2 square centimeter per second to 1.9 square centimeter per second. Extensive PFM investigations on the underlying nature of the domains indicated the presence of local strain gradients and crystallographic inhomogeneities as well as electrical polarization at the ferroelastic domain walls. We propose that these structural and electrical anomalies at the domain walls act as energetic barriers which delay the carrier diffusion perpendicular to the domains, introducing the diffusion anisotropy. Finally, we showed the possibility to manipulate the domain pattern via heat treatment above the phase transition temperature, opening new routes for optimizing optoelectronic devices based on MAPI and other ferroelectric materials. That's it. That was my paper. Thanks for bearing with me till the very end. I hope you found this recording of the paper useful, and I hope to hear you and see you soon on a conference or a visit to Mainz or whatever.